Accession number 9875, reel 19.
Mr. Ashurst, reel 19. You were telling me about a case where you found some valuables in an old chateau. And now you were telling me how the civilian owner had arrived with some staff and
yes.
they'd found some buried valuables in the kitchen. If you'd like to continue.
Yes, well, they carried them all away into the car. And then when they'd finished, he walked down towards the family vault. And I sort of got the wind up a bit. I wonder what the hell he was going to find or say or anything, you know. Because I knew in there was a baby angel in gold sort of gild, you know. Oh, about that height. It was a beauty.
3 foot high.
Yeah. But Jerry had bashed it about and knocked lumps off it. But it must have been a beautiful thing when it was wrong. Anyway, I waited. They were in a minute or two, that's all. And he came out smiling. This civilian, you know. He came out and he was smiling as he was talking to the officers. So I thought, oh, it's all right. He's smiling. Then they got in the car and drove off. And that was the last we ever see of them. Of course, the day after, I think it was, that, yes, we're moving on. We find out we're moving on.
Just a couple more questions. Where did you keep these jewels and bits of gold that you'd got?
Well, I had them at the bottom of my bandage pocket in my uniform. At the bottom and then my bandage on top of them. And one day, a while after, I found a little iron box with a catch on. Just held them nicely. And it went in this pocket and that's where I kept it for months.
How did you eventually get rid of them for a profit or...?
No. No, there's a story to that. I got rid of them. I didn't get rid of them, really. But we started to advance, you know, after Jerry again. And we arrive at St. Quentin, on the left of St. Quentin. And we take up our position there in some trenches, on the left of St. Quentin. And while we were there one night, some jocks came. And they said they were going over on a quiet raid, you know. And we had to follow on after they'd done it. They went over. And we followed them after. And my word, they'd done the job all right too. They'd done about 15 or 20 Germans with bayonets. Yes, caught them running out of the dugouts and lying in the dugouts. They'd stabbed them through. And we had the job of burying them. When they'd gone, the Scots, you know. We had to collect them and bury them.
Were you immune to that sort of job by then, or did it still affect you?
No, it didn't affect it. No, dead, it didn't bother us. We got hold of them and I felt in one fellow's pockets and I got a nice photograph of him and his... I'm thinking it's his father and mother and him and his sister. Or his father and mother and him and his dad, you know. I don't know proper. But he was a young fellow, a young German. He's about 17 or 18. Anyway, it was no use to me, so I stuck it back in his pocket. And we buried him there. We buried him in a grave like this, you know. Just covered him up. And we're in that day, and it's a hell of a place for shelling. It's a rough quarter altogether. And we haven't a lot of cover, The trenches are not too deep or anything. Some of them are dug inside of a sort of a road, just all inside, you know.
About how deep in all then?
Oh, no, all just deeped in that way, for the two walls of the road, you know, coming down beside us. You had to get anywhere to get out of that shell fire. Anyway.
What did you used to do under heavy shell fire like that?
Simply dodge.
By dodge, what do you mean?
Just to the Lord they didn't ditch you, that's all.
You don't mean dodge physically, you mean just hide out of sight, do you, or what?
Yes, that's it. You couldn't run away, really, because you might run in it. You sit there and hope that God it wouldn't get you. That's all you did in most bombardments. Hope to God they didn't drop on you, because you couldn't run away from them. Might just run under one, you know. Anyway, we did that, and then the following day, we're all in that place, and that, it was like a sunken road too. Not too sunken, you know, but a bit deep, and a messenger came from headquarters. Oh, first of all, we're going over the top the following morning. We've got to know that. We're attacking the following morning.
Was this the Hindenburg Line the Germans had retired to?
Yes.
So it was a quite massive fortification in front of you, was it?
No, not really. Nothing extra. But it was the Hindenburg Line. And as far as I understood, I don't know whether it was true, but the French wanted to take St. Quentin without shelling it, if they could. Well, they tried, but Jerry battered them. You know, he battered them down as they came, without artillery. So they didn't get it. Anyway, that afternoon, we know we're going over the top in the morning, and everybody knows that it's going to be a terrific battle. You know.
Do you know the approximate?
A lot of us are going to get it. We know that for a certainty. And a messenger came up in the afternoon. Sandhurst. What? Wanted at headquarters. Right. Nips off. Bent down through bits of trenches. I get to headquarters. Sergeant, it is our turn for the General's guard, and you're the man that's going to take charge of it. You and 9 men will go.
It's a divisional general.
Divisional general guard. You and 9 men. And he said, when are we going then, sir? As soon as possible. You've got to go today. Make your way off today. That was good, you know. That was brilliant. I flew back up those trenches. I did. I told the lads, you jammy bugger. Well, you know, I've been jammy many a time. It's surprising. You jammy bugger. Anyway, I report. I get my tattle together, but I saw these 3 sergeants before I went down, you know. And what about the treasure we had, you know? Well, Waller, I asked him, let me have the stuff. Then it would be okay, because if they got wounded, an RAMC man would go and run through the pockets, you know, and they'd have them, you see, which they always do.
Did you know that for a fact they did that?
Oh, yes. Rob all my comrades, that's RAMC. And the other old 2, the one fellow was about 50, an old regular. And Waller said, yes. All right, he said, you can take mine with you, Sergeant, and keep them. I said, well, If anything happens, I said, I'll certainly let your parents have them, you know. Which I meant at the time. Anyway, I had two kids, and the other two, you know, they weren't bad. They was going to hang on to them. And I bid them farewell, and Waller, you know, he said, you know, this is my last trip. Oh, get out of it. We don't talk like that at all. Tommy Rott, he said, I've told you, this is my last trip. You know. No, we're not having that. That's just, you're just depressed. You'll be all right. Anyway, I went on the guard. And while I was on the guard, of course, I waited for some evidence coming from the battalion. Now they'd gone on with the attack. Got cut up. Said, can you tell me who's killed? Oh, yes, Lieutenant so-and-so. Second Lieutenant so-and-so. Sergeants. I said, how did Sergeant Faller go on? Blown to bits the minute he got up top of the trench. I thought that's what he said. Sergeant Faller said he was blown to bits the minute he got on top of the trench. You might have known what he said.
So you had two lots now?
So I had two lots.
One point just I should have perhaps asked, where had Faller actually found the violin case, the case that the cross was in? Where was it?
Well, I'm thinking just lying on top of the coffins. A coffin. Behind this, you know, the curtains. He would just be lying on top of the coffin.
He hadn't actually gone inside the coffin.
No, he hadn't time. You know, he just bobbed under the thing when he came back with it. So it must have been lying on top of something, and I don't know whether it was a coffin or not. I didn't go and look. Anyway, that's where it would be.
Could you tell me, right, well, that, getting back to you then...
Do you know what that is I'm talking about?
What is, sorry?
The cross. Are you Catholic?
No,
I'm not.
Do you know what it is?
Yes, I've seen, I've forgotten now though. It has a name, you know. It's a big special thing in a Catholic chapel, I believe. You know, it's the thing in it, a Catholic chapel, this particular cross with the mirror in it. And some people, you know, if they know what it is, they'll not tell me. The Catholics, they'll not mention it. I ask them what it is, or, yes, you know, and they'll not tell me what it is. But it has a name, I know. It has two names.
What was the date of this attack, or while you were on divisional guard? Do you know, the German retreat to St. Quentin was in March 1917...
Well,
when would this be?
Did they get to St. Quentin in March? Or what?
I think it was March, I may be wrong. It was round about, it was just after that then, was it?
Oh, yes.
Right. So, if we could talk about what were your duties on the Divisional General's Guard then? Do you know where was he at the time?
Ah, that's another thing. He was in a little village, of course, miles behind. And I don't know the name of the village where he lived. But the duties, we had two tents at the end of the drive, near the road, you know, where we lived. And the sentries was. 2 hours on and 14 off. That was a good job. And one man was the dirty man. He had to do all the dirty work about the place and keep us spotlessly clean. And of course, each day I turned the guard out, present arms, general salute, present arms, every morning when he turned out. Sometimes he would stroll down without the car and have a look at us, you know, close look at us, walk round us, then to his car. Another time he would come quite slow in his car and he would look out at us like this and smile, you know.
Had you had to spend a lot of time getting your kit ready, because you'd been on active service?
We were up to the mark, you know. We had to call at the stores and get clean suits, you know, for that job.
You got new uniforms?
Oh, yes. Clean uniforms, anyway. We had to have them to go there to the general's place. We were fed by the general, you know. The adjutant used to see to us. He used to see to us.
Did you keep the clean uniforms when you left?
Yes. Yes. Yes, we did. We stopped in them uniforms. And we joined the battalion again. Resting again, it was somewhere when we joined them. I know I was in a empty house for a few days somewhere with them. And they were out of the line, you know, when we came out. When I came off guard.
Did you make any effort to find Waller's parents? Fallow's parents?
No, I had no idea. I still had them there in my pocket waiting for the opportunity to come to Blighty, in any case, shape or form.
What had happened to the other two sergeants, the old...
Well, one fella, he parted with a diamond or something and a ruby to the sergeant major. The old fella at 50, and the sergeant major got him down the line on a pioneer company. You see, saying he was too old for soldiering, and he managed it. And the other fella, he carried on. What the hell he did with him, I don't know. But
now you were in rest. I don't think you know where. But this was when the battalion was being rebuilt again, and it's now that particularly, I know you found the new recruits coming were very badly trained. Is that correct?
Yes.
Could you tell me a little about how you tried to train them, bring them up to what you saw as scratch?
Well, there's talking to them, showing them, describing everything to them, showing them a rifle, taking it to pieces, cleaning it, pulling it back, showing them how to handle it in drilling, and they didn't need much learning about marching, did they? There's plenty to do. They learned that by doing it, I think, from villages to village. And like I say, we took them out on the hills, a bit outside the camp, to a trench, and showed them how to throw bombs, let them use them. We let them use live bombs to get them used to the explosion.
Had they not done that before?
No, they hadn't. They hadn't handled a live bomb before.
Was there a danger of accidents there, I presume?
Oh, one did do you know? As he swung it, he hit the back of the trench with it. Dropped it on the floor. I dashed down, got it and went like this. Shut my eyes and threw it up. The officer ducked. And a piece come and hit him. Skimmed across his head like that. He noted that on, you know. Parted his ear for him, nicer than he'd ever parted before, and knocked him unconscious. Of course, I said his tin hat had dropped off in the rush for the bomb, you know, which was quite feasible. So that was all right. He got away with that.
What was the morale of these, the quality, of these new men like? They were untrained, but was their morale as high as the early men you'd known in 14, 15 and 16?
Oh, no.
What was wrong?
No. They didn't seem to realise the seriousness of it at all.
In what way?
Well, they would talk light-hearted about certain things, you know. But when it come to the action, You got to watch them if you could. In trenches, they were snuddled down. You couldn't really trust them to stand up and fire. If he'd been coming, I don't think. They were down, at least if a shell came at all, going miles overhead, which they weren't used to, we were. They ducked down to the bottom of the trench till it had gone.
Do you think they would have made good soldiers if they'd been better trained, or do you just think that they weren't as good quality anyway?
No. They weren't as good quality anyway. A soldier is a soldier when he's made properly, I'll tell you. You know what I mean. And there's no civilian could touch him. For instance, when he's retired a soldier, he'll polish his shoes, you know, look beautiful, shave, watch his tash like they used to do, you know, wouldn't he? And he'd have damned old suit on. But his shoes would be polished and his tash would be waxed. And he'd had a shave. He wouldn't find a civilian doing that. No.
And you think
he's always stuck with a soldier.
You think these new ones weren't soldiers in that way? They didn't have self-discipline.
No, they didn't.
Were they younger or older than the previous people?
Well, I thought they were older, most of them. They seemed to be mostly older men that came. You know, there's quite a good few. Getting on for 50, I'm certain they were. And it was the first time at the front, you know. Well, they had families back home. Well, they were quite worried, you know, some of these fellas. Whereas the young ones weren't quite so worried. No, they weren't. Weren't regular soldiers, no.
Now, what about you? You've said a couple of things that indicate that you'd had quite enough of the war. What was your attitude during this period? You're just about to go, we'll go on to it later, but you went into the Ypres front, into the Passchendaele battle in 1917. Before we go on to that, what was your mental state about the war? Because you've said once or twice you thought you'd had enough. How did that show itself in the way you behaved?
Oh, I suppose I lost my temper many a time when I shouldn't have done. You know, I was angry.
Who with?
Officers, most cases, because they didn't do, if I thought they didn't do their duty, which they didn't many a time. You know, and I was angry and telling the men, you know, bugger him. As a matter of fact, I did that once. Bugger the officer, and he accused me of cowardice, you know.
That's at Newport. We'll come to that later, yeah.
Yes. I didn't go that way, no, not likely. And I got my men safe to the front line.
How about the men? How did you get on with the men?
Oh, fine. Because they preferred me any time to the officers, you know. Yes. I got on fine with it. They believed in me, did the lads. They'd have followed me anywhere. But they wouldn't have followed our officers anywhere, you know.
Why did they believe in you? What was it about you they liked, do you think?
Because they could see I was more used to the damn job. And I knew what I was doing. Some of the officers had just come out. They didn't, you know. On that, there was quite a lot of cowardice among officers, you know. Quite a lot.
In what way?
Well, not doing their duty. Palming it on to somebody else. When I'd been supposed to have gone out on night patrol, crawling about no man's land, I've had an officer's flask in my pocket above once. A whiskey. Which I never owned. But he should have been there with the whiskey. Do you see what I mean? He should have been there with me. but I used to go out and do it, and he used to hand my report in.
He used to give the whiskey to you in return?
Yes. Take this with you, you know. Well, it was better, really, going and taking it with me than him coming with us, because he'd only be a damn nuisance. Many a time. It'd be windy, more windier than men, probably. Oh, there's some windy officers.
How did they show it?
Well, it was quite plain. You couldn't get them to move, and one thing and another. Oh, no. There were some good officers and some bad ones.
What else made a bad officer besides being windy?
Oh, well, there really wasn't. We weren't bothered about him being bad otherwise, you know, really.
Were there any arrogant or overbearing ones?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, there was. Thought they were somebody, you know. And there was others. My last lieutenant was a fine lieutenant, a grand fella, and a fine lieutenant, and he was out of the guards. He'd been in the guards and got promotion.
What made a good officer then?
Well, a sensible officer. He did everything right as should be done. And he wasn't in the least afraid, you know. He'd be there if he was wanted. Or if he was called on, he'd be there. There were some officers.
Who did you think the responsibility lay with in the front line? The officers or the NCOs?
The NCOs. That war was fought with NCOs, not officers. Yes. There were some good officers, right enough. Very good officers. Like him, Sharples, from Manchester. But there were some poor officers too. They were better. Well, like that fella that accused me of.
We'll come to that.
Of cowardice. He went down the line sick. Sick, mind you.
What about?
There's nothing wrong with him. He was. Eh?
What about military discipline? How did that hold up at the front? There's a variety of things I'm thinking of. Did you have any?
It wasn't quite so serious as you think. You know, you could curse an officer and he could curse you, anything like that. Or you could have a scrap with a fella and it would be okay.
Not with an officer, though?
No, not with an officer, no.
But you could fight another below you?
Yes.
Or equal rank?
Aye. Oh, yes, you'd just be told off.
So you could use fairly strong language with an officer in a disagreement without...
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, you could. Yes, you could.
Did you think...
That's the case of Passchendaele. That's where there's a case like that. When we get to Passchendaele... Where I tell the officer, I'm not bloody going up there again. That was deliberate denial of my duty. He could have had him shot for that. Nevertheless, I told him. I've been up with 25 men.
We'll come to that, because...
Yes. Lost three.
Did you think the officers had more comfortable lives than the men?
Yes, because... When there was a chance of any comfort, they had it. If we got to a village, they had the best billet, you know, in every way that they could, either in food or lodgings or anything else. They always had the best.
Do you think
that could be found?
Do you think their servants made a difference? Did it make it a lot easier for them?
Oh, yes. They run about for them, the servants. Batmen. Oh, yes, they ran about for him.
Did you have much time for officers overall?
Well, like I say, not a lot. But I did like this sharpener. The last, very last one I had. He was the best through the old war that I'd ever come across. He was a gentleman in every way, even in wartime at the front. He was a gentleman. And the lad said the same as me. That was the best of it, you know.
When did you get Sharples?
Well, I forget now, really, but when I first got him.
You had him for quite a while, though?
Oh, yes. Yes, I had him for quite a while.